Welcome to Torah from JTS, a weekly commentary from the Jewish Theological Seminary.
This is Rabbi Naomi Kalish with a Torah commentary for Vayetze, listening with Yaakov. A Thanksgiving meal or any family gathering in our time of divisive politics and social polarization can be a source of great anxiety. How will we remain civil to those with whom we profoundly disagree? Parshat Vayetze provides us with a model of how one of our ancestors, Yaakov, managed conflict with a family member and was able to move towards reconciliation. A crucial aspect of reconciliation and healing is the willingness to listen, through the process of listening, to make space for the uniqueness of the other person. Jonathan Shea, a clinical psychiatrist who has worked extensively with veterans, writes that healing from trauma depends upon communalization of the trauma. Being able safely to tell the story to someone who is listening and who can be trusted to retell it truthfully to others in the community. Listening is a crucial component of the necessary trust building. He continues, so before analyzing, before classifying, before thinking, before trying to do anything, we should listen. Often, we listen to respond instead of to understand. Shea writes that often our listening deteriorates into intellectual sorting, and this breaks trust. What can Yaakov teach us about listening that paves the way towards peace? The parsha begins with Yaakov fleeing from his brother Esav, from whom he had stolen the blessing. Following his mother's instruction, Yaakov seeks refuge in his uncle Laban's home. Now, years after his deception, Yaakov has his own humbling experience of being tricked. Laban repeatedly changes the terms of agreement for both Yaakov's marriage and his employment, manipulating Yaakov into greater service to him. Eventually, Yaakov makes a unilateral decision to flee with his household from Laban. When an incensed Laban pursues him, Yaakov is forced to stop and engage his adversary. This encounter could have taken many different forms, including physical violence. Instead, the story culminates with a pact leading to peace between Yaakov and Laban. Embedded in the story of Yaakov and Laban is a process of interpersonal trust building, negotiation, assertion, and accommodation. Laban first speaks and has much to say. And he begins with an accusation. What did you mean by keeping me in the dark and carrying off my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee in secrecy and mislead me and not tell me? He fashions himself as the hero who would have sent Yaakov off with a festive meal, music, and kisses goodbye, a self-portrayal inconsistent with the 14 years of deception and manipulation during which he prevented Yaakov from leaving. How does Yaakov respond? What do we do when faced with someone who makes assertions that we think are absurd and self-serving? First, Yaakov listens. This must have been a very difficult process. He surely would have objected to Laban's portrayal of the events. Yaakov hears Laban's grievances, and surely he does not agree with much of the content of what he says. But his listening builds enough trust that they are able to resolve their differences civilly. Israeli peace activist Rav Hanan Schlesinger identifies listening as an essential component in reconciliation. He says, we have to be able to reach across the divides and listen. We even have to listen when it looks like the other side doesn't want to listen. You should have the strength of character to enter into a dialogue in which at the first meeting or two, they only yell at you. Because very often, not always, after they yell and they say and they see that you listen, you're willing to acknowledge some of their grievances. Sometimes they calm down and they're willing to listen to you. What was significant in Yaakov's participation was not his argument, but that he gave Laban the opportunity to speak his mind and to be heard. When he did respond, it was with what is sometimes referred to as an I statement. He said, I was afraid because I thought you would take your daughters from me by force. The two men go back and forth, and as Rolf Schlesinger describes, often happens, the experience of listening drew them closer and maximized their ability to make a pact. After exhausting his need to speak his mind, Levon shifts his posture and says to Yaakov, "Come then, let us make a pact, you and I, that there may be a witness between you and me." The process of peace building becomes formalized through language and ritual. Following Levon's proposal, Yaakov and his household create a pillar of stones, after which the Torah tells us, "Vayikra lo Levon Yegar Sahaduta, Yaakov Kara lo Galaed." Levon names it Yegar Sahaduta, and Yaakov named it Galaed. Traditional commentaries are fascinated by the different names given for this pillar by Levon and Yaakov. As Rashi explains, these phrases are respectfully the Aramaic and Hebrew words for mound of witness. Yegar Sahaduta is also the first appearance of Aramaic in the Torah. We see a process of translation and interpretation among the two men as they navigate the use of two languages and ultimately two cultures and worldviews. Yaakov translates Levon's Aramaic term, Yegar Sahaduta, into Hebrew. Levon then offers in Hebrew, in Yaakov's language, an explanation of the meaning of the name based on its literal meaning. "This mound is a witness between you and me this day." Each of them is navigating the process of reconciliation through their native tongue and translation into the other's language. The challenge of making space for and tolerating both men's worldviews is intensified by their inclusion of the religious language of prayer. When Levon offers his interpretation of the pillar's symbolism, he concludes with this prayer: "Elohei Avraham v'Elohei Nahor yishpatu v'neinu. Elohei Avihem v'yishava Yaakov b'fachad Aviv Yitzchak." Levon says, "May the God of Abraham's house and the God of Nahor's house judge between us." The biblical author then adds that these refer to Yaakov and Levon's ancestral deities. Interestingly, Levon references Yaakov's grandfather, but he goes one generation farther back in invoking his ancestry to Terah, who was a common ancestor to both of them. As Sforno explains, he had chosen Nahor to underline that Nahor's God was also the God of Terah, who was the father of both Abraham and Nahor. Levon likely anticipated that Yaakov would be uncomfortable with invoking the deity of an idolater, and so he chooses their common ancestor as a way of establishing common ground. Yaakov does indeed seem uncomfortable. The Torah tells us that Yaakov then swore by the fear of the God of Yitzhak's house. As Sforno explains, Yaakov chose someone who was not the son of Terah to make certain it was understood that his oath was only to the God of Yitzhak. Yet while prayer can be an area of divisiveness, it can also create a meaningful ground for people from diverse backgrounds with contentious relationships. Chaplains frequently pray with people from religious backgrounds different from their own. Without being syncretistic, they work with the recipients of their care to find either common language, or they make space for the other to pray while they themselves being present and bearing witness to the other at prayer. Community clergy and religious leaders also often come together at times of mutual interest, such as Thanksgiving services, or to stand with one another during difficult times. In the presence of one another, they often offer prayers or reflections that can vary greatly in language, beliefs, and form. These programs are often not fully comfortable, just as listening is not always comfortable. But both experiences can create the kinds of relationship that build trust, a most basic component of reconciliation.
If you enjoyed this program, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. And discover JTS's other series by visiting jtsa.edu/podcasts. To learn with JTS faculty in live online classes, visit jtsa.edu/online. And you can get in touch with us by emailing onlinelearning@jtsa.edu. Thanks for listening.